and welcome to Show Tunes with Kate Botello from Interlochen Public Radio. Coming up on the show tonight, when rock stars make musical theater, the shows tend to either be soaring successes or massive flops. We'll hear from both. At intermission, why actors won't say the forbidden word and other superstitions for theater types. In Act Two, we'll hear from some hugely successful, long-running shows, a couple of which are kind of surprising. Lights are dimming in our virtual house, and the orchestra is tuning up for the overture. Please silence your cell phones, identify the exits nearest you, refrain from flash photography, but keep your lighter out, because we're going to hear some rockin' tunes tonight. We'll start with the fascinating overture to one of the most popular rock musicals ever, Jesus Christ Superstar. Now, I love this piece because on one hand, it's just a beautiful overture, and on the other hand, it rocks. From our vinyl vault, here's the overture to the original 1970 concept album of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Thank you.
That was the Overture to Jesus Christ Superstar with music by Andrew Lloyd Webber. Up next, rock musicals made by rock musicians. Now you'd think, easy peasy, right? How could you go wrong when someone who writes rock songs for a living tries to put them into a musical? Well, it's a lot harder than it sounds. Just ask, for instance, Bono and The Edge from the legendary rock band U2. They had a project that, on paper, just could not fail. A musical about comic book hero Spider-Man, directed by creative genius Julie Taymor. But once it got to the stage, despite huge excitement from the fans, it just didn't gel. And the effects were a mess. There were performer injuries. It was really expensive. And then Julie Taymor quit the run. Now, despite starting over with a new director, Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark just never really made it off the ground. Here's Boy Falls from the Sky.
You can change your mind, but you cannot change your heart. Your heart knows when you're hiding. Your heart knows where you are. I'd be myself if I knew I'd become. You don't have to fly too high to get too close to the sun. See the bird fall from the
That was Reeve Carney as the webbed wonder Spider-Man in a song that could be called Boy Falls from the Sky, But Money Doesn't. Up next, another surefire winner, a beloved musician, and great premise get together to fail miserably. It's too bad. Hands on a Hard Body really is a great idea for a musical. A Hands on a Hard Body contest involves a group of contestants who place their hands on a vehicle of some sort, and the last person to move their hands wins it. Now, in this production, 10 Texans are battling for a Nissan truck. So that's our great premise, looking into the lives and motivations of 10 people with their hands stuck to a truck. And our great musician is none other than Trey Anastasio of the rock band Phish. Top that off with lyrics by the brilliant Amanda Green, daughter of famed songwriters Compton and Green. And Hands on a Hard Body should have killed. The cast was excellent. Critics liked it. It was nominated for 3 Tonys, including Best Score. But alas, the show only made it for 28 previews and 28 performances. Here's the opening number to the show, explaining how the contest and show are a human drama kind of thing.
Everything you thought you knew, leave that all behind. Just keep one hand on the truck. Try not to lose your mind. This is not a child's game. It's not a game of chance. It's a sharp-honed skill. It's a test of will. It's keeping still when the devil tells you dance.
But can I bend your ear a bit? exercise every 6 hours.
You may not lean, squat, or rest your leg.
No time may you remove your hand from the truck.
And that hand must be covered. We got these cotton gloves courtesy of True Value Hardware.
No guns, no profanity.
No alcohol or drugs.
Don't make any judgments. Let the players play.
Hunter Foster and the cast of Hands on a Hard Body explained how the contest is a human drama kind of thing. And now, here are three words. Randy, Newman, Faust. One of these words is not like the others. I mean, Randy Newman writes about fun things or sentimental things, things like toys and short people. But this is Faust. This is a centuries-old German story popularized by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe in the early 1800s. And it's about a bored intellectual who sells his soul to the devil, though in this case Newman updates it to being about God and the devil fighting over the soul of a kid who goes to Notre Dame. Now, it ran at the La Jolla Playhouse and the Goodman Theater and was performed in New York in concert format, but despite two rewrites, the new Faust never made it to Broadway. Here's a snippet of Randy Newman's demo for Faust, in which he sets up a number for us called Life Has Been Good to Me.
Faust and Margaret have just wandered off into the forest somewhere. And Martha, Margaret's bad friend, comes in with the devil. It's her first entrance. And she sings this song, which sort of scares the devil a little bit. From something else, I know. Life has been good to me. Got very few complaints so far. Life has been good to me. Hope you're as happy wherever you are.
Newman released a full concept album for Faust in 1996. Here's the finished version of Life Has Been Good to Me, sung by the album's version of Bad Girl Martha, Bonnie Raitt.
Got the blue sky every morning, big yellow moon at night. I always do whatever I want to, and everything I do, it always turns out right. Hey, hey.
good friends. They adore me, know how to treat me right. I got a good man waiting for me. I won every fight I've been in, and it always turned out that I was right. Hey, hey.
That was rocker Bonnie Raitt as Martha singing Life Has Been Good to Me from Randy Newman's Faust. If the song sounds familiar, it could be that you're thinking of an excellent French Stewart performance of the song on the sitcom Third Rock from the Sun. So, those are our flops. Let's start talking about our successes. First up, a show that started out as a 1969 concept album, then became a Ken Russell movie in 1975, before it was translated to the stage in 1993. We're talking about Tommy by The Who. Now, the show is about a young boy traumatized into total silence and darkness in which he can neither hear, see, or speak. Tommy turns out to be a genius at pinball, which garners him rabid fans and eventually his own religion. From The Who's Tommy, here's Pinball Wizard.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid soon plays a mean pinball. He stands like a statue, pick up part of the machine. Feeling all the bumpers, always playing clean. My intuition, the digit counts on small. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid soon plays a mean pinball. He's a pinball wizard that has to be a twist. A pinball wizard's got such a it all. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. I thought I was the violent table king, but I just handed my pinball crown to him. I need a pen, he doesn't
know
what makes him so good.
Best. Gives all the
Anthony Baril sang lead with the ensemble as he was defeated by the Pinball Wizard, otherwise known as Tommy. Music and lyrics were by Pete Townsend. The Who's Tommy ran for 899 performances on Broadway, was nominated for 11 Tony Awards, and won 5. Up next, another wildly successful rock musical, even though it never made it to Broadway. We're talking about the music of the rock band Queen, as heard in the musical We Will Rock You. Now, Broadway or no, We Will Rock You opened in 2002 and ran for 12 years on the West End in London. The musical is set 300 years into a dystopian future in which everyone on Earth, or iPlanet, as it's now called, is expected to conform in the most dull, gray way possible. And the plot centers around a couple of rebels, student Galileo and goth girl Scaramouche. Now here's Scaramouche being teased by the conforming teen queens in Somebody to Love.
Find me somebody to love. Each morning I get up, I die a little, can barely stand on my feet.
Take a look, take a look in the mirror and decide what to do with me.
I spend all my years in
believing you,
but I'm just
Jane Fox's Scaramouche faced up to the teen queen mean girls in Somebody to Love from We Will Rock You. Music and lyrics were by Queen and Ben Elton. Up next, music by hair bands. No, not like the elastic bands you used to hold up a ponytail. I'm talking about the 1980s and bands like Def Leppard and Twisted Sister, known for big guitars and equally big hair. Now, you wouldn't necessarily think that 80s metal would really be something that would translate to Broadway, but in 2009, jukebox musical Rock of Ages arrived, ran for more than 2,000 performances, and is now produced all over the world. Here's Constantine Maroulis, Amy Spanger, and the cast of Rock of Ages with Don't Stop Believin', and keep your ears open for a Michigan shout-out in the first couple of minutes.
So that's how our story wraps up. As for Drew and Sherry, it looks like they found love in place of fame. Living in Glendale now, I believe. They are the perfect illustration that on the strip, sometimes the dreams you come in with may not be the dreams you leave with. But hey, they still rhyme.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. Oh, she took the midnight train going anywhere.
Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit, Michigan. He took the midnight train going
Rock of Ages, that was Don't Stop Believin', written by the rock band Journey. And by the way, if you thought hair metal made for unusual Broadway content, so did Gerard Alessandrini and the folks of Forbidden Broadway.
Come see Rock of Ages. We're at the Helen Hayes. Everyone knows who goes to those kind of plays. People into wrestling and guys who love a fight. Too many NASCAR fans seeing shows tonight. Producers make a million stealing from your radios. Don't you remember? We filled this city. We filled this city with NASCAR shows. We filled this city. We filled this city with NASCAR shows.
Well, the chime has rung, so it's time now to head out to the lobby for intermission, where you can find a comfy chair and knock wood, because we're about to dig into some theatrical superstitions. I don't know why actors are such a superstitious bunch, but there are all kinds of weird little rules you need to follow when you work in the theater. We're going to try to give you some of the whys to go with the don'ts. Now let's start right off the bat with the forbidden word. Now this one's so important that I'm a little nervous about saying it. I mean, even on a radio show about theater. But I'm going to do it. If you're an actor inside a theater, do not ever say the word... Oh, man, okay... Do not say Macbeth. See? No, really, though. For many, many years, actor types have refused to say the name of Shakespeare's notorious play of royalty and murder. Now, some people say the show deals with such diabolical elements that it's cursed entirely. Some say that it's because the witches' incantations, like Double Double, Toil and Trouble, are based on real spells. There are supposedly all kinds of terrible things that have occurred during the run of what we safely refer to as the Scottish tragedy or the Scottish play. Now, some folks are more pragmatic and think that many failing theaters will put on the Scottish play to attract audiences, but it's a quick fix that rarely saves the theater. Nonetheless, if you do end up speaking the name of the Scottish play, you do have remedies. The first is to step outside the dressing room, which will be no problem, because if you say it in the dressing room, you're going to get kicked out. Anyway, go outside. Turn around 3 times, spit, and swear. Now, in lieu of swearing, you may also issue a Shakespearean insult, such as poisonous bunched-back toad, or the rankest compound of villainous smell that ever offended nostril. Option B is to spin around 11 times and apologize to Dionysus. Option C is to say the word 3 times in a row while tapping your left shoulder. Or you can just quote some other Shakespearean play with "If we shadows have offended" or something. Usually the old spit and swear is the most popular option. Actors love to swear.
Brush up your Shakespeare and they'll all kowtow. Thinks thou, and they'll all kowtow. Us Botkins all kowtow.
Okay, superstition number 2. Never wish good luck to an actor. Instead, you're supposed to say break a leg. Now, there are all kinds of stories about where this one comes from. Some say it's from vaudeville, where the legs of the theater are just past the wings where you wait to go on, meaning you've broken the leg by getting to go on stage. Another version goes back to Shakespeare, where breaking the leg means bending your knee while taking a bow. Now, I heard a version that went back to legendary 19th century actress Sarah Bernhardt, who broke her leg on stage after being wished good luck.
Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with, luck be a lady tonight.
Superstition number 3. No whistling backstage. Now, this one can be tough to avoid, especially if you're a musical theater actor with show tunes stuck in your head, but whistling is a real no-no for a very practical reason. In the past, the backstage crew or the stagehands used a lot of ropes and sandbags to raise and lower scenery. Now, many of them had been sailors in their previous jobs, so they used a common naval system to clue each other in about when to change the backdrops. That system was, you guessed it, whistling. So if you were all out there, you know... and you happen to whistle just the wrong way, you could get brained by a backdrop. Nowadays, a lot of things are motorized and stagehands have headsets, but whistling is still forbidden. Here are a few more superstitions. For the props department, never use real money, jewelry, or flowers on stage. Now that one's not too hard to figure out. People could easily steal the real stuff, and flowers wilt under hot lights. There are many others. Never have three lit candles on stage at the same time, never give flowers until after a performance, and a bad final dress rehearsal means a great opening night. But I'll leave you with one more superstition to think about. It's a bad idea to say the last line of a play in rehearsal because it's not really done until the audience is present. Now, this one's not always easy to pull off, so most directors these days just wait to stage the curtain call to the last minute and make sure there are people in the house to watch, because bowing to an empty house is bad luck, too. Lights are flashing in our virtual lobby, and there goes the chime, so let's turn around three times, spit, swear, and head back into the house for Act Two. Let's take a listen to some mega-hit shows that have yet to make an appearance on Show Tunes. We'll start with one of the top-selling shows of all time, and for a while, the top-selling show. Now, this show ran for 5,959 performances. It was, dare I say, popular. The year was 1976, and the show was O Calcutta. Now, I'll be honest with you and say that before doing research for this episode, all I knew about O Calcutta was that it featured nudity. And that was it. O Calcutta was, you know, that naked show. I had no idea it was such a hit, so I had to check it out. Now, first of all, the music was written by Robert Dennis, Stanley Walden, and Peter Schickele, the famed composer and musicologist otherwise known as P.D.Q. Bach.
Themes. It's very exciting. The beginning of a symphony is always very exciting, folks. I don't know whether it's slow or fast yet because it keeps stopping.
Yeah, that Peter Schickele. So that was promising. And the sketches were written by renowned playwrights like Sam Shepard, Jules Pfeiffer, even John Lennon and Samuel Beckett, until Beckett refused to allow them to use his work in the show. That should have been a flag. But no. Now, I trudged forward until I found a video copy so that I, too, like thousands of 1970s Broadway fans, could see O Calcutta. So I sat down with some potato chips and clicked play. And friend, I have to tell you, within 10 minutes, I felt like Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
What is this, a freak out?
I mean, I should have known, right? This show was big right in the middle of the 70s in all their psychedelic sexual revolution trippy glory. I mean, I often enjoy the avant-garde, but this one was just... wow. One critic, Irving Wardle of the Times, appreciated the basic concepts of body and sex positivity, but he also said, in many ways, it is a ghastly show, ill-written, juvenile, and attention-seeking. But I say again, between its two runs in 1969 and 1976, O Calcutta gave 5,959 performances. So, just out of historical curiosity, let's check out the title song. Now, try to picture this. It's the opening of the show, and the cast steps out mysteriously to the edge of the stage. They're all wearing slinky white robes, and while this groovy song is going on, they're taking turns giving the audience a peek or full-on view of what's underneath. Now, of course, this is radio, so the nudity here is not a problem.
Thank you.
That was the very talented and naked ensemble of O Calcutta, which, by the way, got its name from a French pun for telling someone they have a nice derriere. Now, as for this next one, friends, if we learn nothing else from O Calcutta, it's that 1970s Broadway could be very experimental. Now, one oddball experiment in particular turned out well for everybody, racking up 1,920 performances and making its star a megastar. I'm talking about a 1974 one-act musical called The Magic Show, which was a magic show, with songs by Stephen Schwartz and a plot about a good magician versus an evil magician. Now, the good magician was played by Doug Henning, who became famous for being a master illusionist and a really sweet guy, and also for his big mop of long curly hair, handlebar mustache, and rainbow vests. The magic show is as good-natured as its star, and in this next song, Doug's gentle magical assistant, Cal, is in love with him, wondering how to get him to notice her.
I'd like to be a lion tamer, sequins and tights, and silk top hats. I know I could be a lion tamer. I've always gotten along with cats. I'd have a whip, but never use it. I'd simply hold it in my hand. I wanna be a lion. I could be a lion tamer, I would be someone grand. I couldn't be a ballerina, I never could stand on my
with the rose, but everyone has a spell.
such a lion tamer. If I could be a lion tamer, I would be special.
Dale Souls was the shy cow with the lion tamer from The Magic Show. Music and lyrics were by Stephen Schwartz. It's time now for the finale of tonight's show. We'll come full circle, as with our overture, tonight's finale is from Jesus Christ Superstar. That was John 1941, the finale to Jesus Christ Superstar, with music by Andrew Lloyd Webber. The curtain falls, the crowd goes wild, the lights come up, and we come to the end of another episode of Show Tunes with Kate Potello. That is me. Find all our episodes online at interlochenpublicradio.org. Dan Wanchura was our producer. This is Interlochen Public Radio. See you in the aisles.